Oracle, personal. Entry number 803, NML day 354, 2314 Zulu. Dear Dad, tomorrow is Christmas Eve. I haven't been this excited since I was little, and I don't know why, but it honestly does feel special. Maybe it's because there's just been so much this year, so long since there's been anything, any way to celebrate. And since the opportunity now exists, I want to embrace it. Maybe it's because, since Gotham is in such a sorry state, the spirit of the season is honestly evident. No advertising, no crass commercialization, just an honest wish for peace on Earth and goodwill toward men. Or maybe I'm just hoping you got me some really good presents. That's a joke. I am stunned by the progress that's been made in the last couple of weeks, by the amount of construction that has been completed. Gotham is, of course, a far cry from being even a ghost of what it once was. But there's life on the streets again, and hope in the air. And I have no doubt now that we're going to make it. And I'm not the only one who thinks that way. I know Nightwing, Robin, Cassandra, all of them are possessed of the same budding optimism. Even Batman seems almost willing to accept it. I think he would accept it, if it weren't for Joker. Joker, still missing in action. Still hiding somewhere in the city, planning something. The first time in almost 2 weeks that I saw Batman was this afternoon. He looked haggard, and that's something, as you know. When it shows on him, then you know it's taking a toll.
Still nothing?
Afraid not. You're sure he's still in the city?
Positive. He wouldn't leave. He's planning something. Probably for New Year's. Probably for the 11th hour. He'll try to sabotage the opening, most likely.
Makes sense. Luther's already announced plans for a big blowout at the Babylon Towers. He's already got people making certain the building will be ready come New Year's Eve. Batman stared at the wall behind me for several seconds.
Boss? You want to get some rest yourself?
No. Alfred's planning a Christmas dinner for tomorrow evening. I'll get to rest then.
He looked at me again, as if remembering that I was actually in the same room. Then tapped the top of my monitor.
Upload the files.
Now?
Within the hour.
Consider it done. Can I assume you're ready to take Luther on?
Not me, Lucius Fox. Bruce Wayne will be watching.
It had been a long time since he'd walked as Bruce Wayne. He sat on the edge of the bed in the apartment, looking at himself in the mirror, trying to remember how to do it. The clothes were right, he saw that. The Armani cut perfectly. The Ferragamo shoes on his feet shined to a rich luster. He tried to put the grin on his face, the vaguely vacuous one that was in its way just as effective as the cowl.
Master Bruce, Mr. Fox is here.
Be right there.
Very good, sir.
He got to his feet, watching his reflection move in the mirror. He adjusted his posture, lowering his chin just a bit more, bringing his shoulders in slightly, slouching just a bit. He tried the grin and thought it looked stupid.
Bruce Wayne. Bruce, Bruce. Bruce Wayne, Bruce Wayne, Bruce Wayne. Bruce, Bruce. Bruce.
He thought about golf and pretty girls and expensive champagne, and then he opened the door and moved into the main room of the apartment, among the mixed furniture where Alfred had been diligently unpacking their temporary home. The apartment was the penthouse suite at the Dallas Arms, a Wayne-owned building that had survived not only the quake in Black Mask, but the depths of the No Man's Land itself. Work had been done on it, of course, getting the windows replaced and the power squared away, and the luxury of it bothered him. It seemed very wrong that he should live in this comfort, while so many still went without power. But that was part of Bruce Wayne, too, and the fact was that he had opened the whole building to residents rent-free, this one and a dozen others. More temporary housing every day. Lucius was waiting in the living room, holding his leather barrister's case, wearing a suit and looking vaguely irritated at having been kept waiting. Bruce thought he looked older, his hair just a little grayer. He looked healthy nonetheless, and Bruce realized that he was truly glad to see him.
Lucius!
The moment the name was out of his mouth, he knew he'd gotten it right, that he was Bruce Wayne again. He took loping strides forward, offering his hand and clapping Lucius on the shoulder at the same time.
It's great to see you. Just wonderful. How have you been? How's your wife? How are the kids?
Fine, thanks, Bruce. We're all fine. They're staying in New York for the season. Didn't want them moving back to Gotham until everything was official.
Oh, of course, of course. Gotta take care of your family. So, what's this all about?
He gestured at the couch, then half fell, half flopped into the empty armchair opposite it. Lucius sat, opening the case and removing a sheaf of papers.
You remember when you called me from Nice?
Nice?
In France, Bruce?
Oh, right, yeah. That was Sissy, I think. Alfred?
Master Bruce?
Nice. Was I with Sissy or Missy or... Who was that?
Who can remember? Mr. Fox, would you like a cup of tea?
Thank you, Alfred.
And I'd like some hot chocolate, with sprinkles, and the little marshmallows this time.
Very good, sir.
Alfred moved into the kitchen. Lucius pushed the papers at Bruce, who took them with some hesitation, as if they might require his thought.
You told me someone was buying Gotham real estate, remember?
Did I?
Bruce, take a look at what I just handed you, would you please?
Bruce shrugged and began flipping through the papers. What he saw gave him great satisfaction, and he took pains to keep that from showing on his face, instead showing Lucius only idle interest, then confusion, then boredom. After all, he was looking at nothing but legal documents, what looked to be deeds and titles. Bruce Wayne could hardly be counted on to notice that there were two copies of each document, one from the Library of Congress, courtesy of Oracle, of course, and the other a forgery of the same, saying that Lex Luthor or Lex Corp or one of Lex Corp's subsidiaries was, in fact, the owner of the same land.
Well?
Bruce furrowed his brow, then looked toward the kitchen.
What's taking Alfred so long? Alfred?
Yes, Master Bruce?
What's taking so long?
I'm melting the chocolate as we speak, sir.
Good.
Bruce, what do you think?
I think it's a lot of paper, Lucius. I don't know what you're trying to show me. I'm sorry. I'm missing it, I guess.
What you're holding are copies of the official deeds to various properties in Gotham.
Oh, so,
You're also holding duplicates, claiming that those same properties are now owned by LexCorp in one fashion or another.
Bruce looked at him blankly.
What that means, Bruce, is that Luthor has been buying up Gotham real estate. Except I did some checking, and it turns out that he never paid anyone any money for the land. Yet he has all of these deeds that say he's the sole owner.
Well, where did the other ones come from? The real ones? I heard that all the records were destroyed sometime during the year, that someone burnt them all up.
That's right. But I found copies that had been filed with the federal government before No Man's Land began. Somehow, Luthor neglected to look for those. Either he didn't think about it, or he didn't find them. Because with what I've got, we can prove he's committing fraud.
Alfred returned from the kitchen with a tray, offering Lucius a cup of tea. He gave Bruce his hot chocolate in a mug that said, "I ate the worm in Tijuana." Bruce took the mug in both hands and sipped, and then had to hide his surprise. Alfred had honestly melted chocolate to prepare the drink.
So, what now, Lucius?
We confront Luthor.
We?
Don't worry, Bruce. I'll do all the talking.
Lucius, Bruce, welcome. Please have a seat.
Luthor received Bruce and Lucius in his luxury hut, offering them seats in front of a coffee table. His bodyguard Mercy stayed in the room by the door. She was watching them carefully, and Bruce could tell she knew what she was looking for, and so he leered at her legs for a bit. She ignored him, which was exactly the result Bruce wanted.
Now then, gentlemen, what's so urgent it couldn't wait until morning?
If I may, Bruce?
By all means.
Bruce was sneaking another gaze at Mercy's legs.
We were updating our records this past week in preparation for Wayne Enterprises' return to Gotham, and we came across some incongruities.
Incongruities?
Luther's brow creased slightly.
Of what sort, Lucius?
I was hoping you could answer that, actually.
Lucius removed the papers from his bag and slid them across the table to Luthor. Luthor went through the pile with increasing concern. Luther's brow creased again, this time more profoundly. Bruce cracked his knuckles, and Lucius shot him a dirty look.
Sorry.
Luthor took almost 20 minutes going through the whole stack in silence. Finally, he looked up.
Incongruities, indeed.
I'm not certain what to make of them. If they're accurate, it implies that your interest in rebuilding Gotham is less than philanthropic, to use the media's term. I'd hate to think that were the case, Lex.
Luther's face was blank, but Bruce could see the wheel spinning beneath the bald head, the darkness filling the man's gaze.
These could all be a fraud. Someone probably planted these in an attempt to make me look bad.
Most likely. But I did some checking, trying to make some sense of the matter, you understand? And best as I can tell, none of those titles has actually traded hands. So the options are that either someone is indeed trying to make you look like a villain...
Please, go on.
Well, I'd hate to even speak it, Lex. It's really incomprehensible to me that the other could be true.
That I would have forged these titles?
You would?
Luther gave Bruce a look that would have made the Batman proud.
Of course he wouldn't. Bruce, think, please. Mr. Luthor is the richest man in the world. He doesn't need to steal land when he can buy it. The only plausible explanation here is that someone is trying to slander him.
Yes, well...
Luther forced a smile into place.
I want to thank you for bringing this to my attention, Lucius. I'll have my people look into it immediately. I'd hate for the media to hear even the slightest whisper of this.
They won't be hearing anything from us, Lex.
Do you mind if I keep hold of these? Might give my people a lead.
Oh, go ahead.
Lucius got to his feet.
I've got copies if you need more.
Do you?
Several. Just in case. Bruce?
Nice place you got here, Lex.
Glad you like it. Mercy, please show them out.
Thanks for seeing us.
Luther didn't respond, but Bruce thought Mercy looked mighty angry as he passed her on the way out. Before she could shut the door, though, he turned and stuck his head back in, looking at her with his most charming grin.
You know, I don't have a date yet for New Year's.
I'd rather dance alone, barefoot on broken glass.
When Bruce returned to Luther's hut later that night, he returned as the Batman. Once again, he roused Luther from his sleep.
I told you this was my city.
Batman held his hand over Luther's mouth, keeping him pinned to the bed.
You press any claim to any property in Gotham, I'll make sure the documents Lucius Fox found go straight to the press. I will make certain your reputation is destroyed. Do you understand?
Luther nodded, his eyes shouting hatred.
I want you out of my town by New Year's Day.
He checked to see that Mercy was still unconscious in her chair, which she was, then left the room like a bad dream.
Give me the knife.
Dick Grayson reached for the carving knife, and Alfred deftly moved it away.
Absolutely not. Sit down.
How many times do I have to say this? I'll carve, you sit.
Certainly not. It wouldn't be proper.
Give me the knife.
I reiterate, absolutely not.
Dick tried to reach around the butler, and Alfred gently elbowed him in the gut.
Oh, hey!
Leslie Tompkins looked down the length of the table, past where Cassandra was seated, to the head, at Bruce Wayne. Somehow, Alfred had managed to put together a substantial spread. 2 bottles of wine, a fresh loaf of bread, a fresh salad, mashed potatoes with gravy, even stuffing. The crystal of the glassware shimmered in the apartment light.
Thanks for joining us, Cassandra.
Cassandra nodded.
Master Dick, if you do not sit
down... Do they do this every year?
Every year? They do this every meal.
Stop!
My word.
Cassandra grinned, reached across the table... and took the carving knife. Then, she set about cutting the bird. Andy DeFilippis left Central just before dark on Christmas Eve. He was exhausted, but the closer he got to his temporary home in Tri-Corner, the closer he got to his bride-to-be and their little boy, the faster he found himself going. He'd even managed to score some presents for their first Christmas together, and though they weren't anything fancy, he hoped that they'd bring joy. He'd finally found a ring for Chris, and he was already imagining the look on her face when he gave it to her. The way her eyes smiled suddenly, and her cheeks turned pink. Their son had inherited that smile, and it had given Andy more joy in the last couple of months than he'd ever thought he'd feel, especially in the no man's land. For Justin, he'd found a teddy bear, soft and clean, and as big as the 3-month-old himself. DeFilippis reached the house and stepped inside.
Chris!
He frowned and moved forward down the darkened hall, feeling for the switch. Power had been returned to Tri-Corner earlier that week, and with it had come electric heat, and the temperature change from the outside had him sweating inside his jacket. His fingers found the switch, and he looked into the living room and didn't see any signs of Chris or Justin. Maybe she was with Montoya.
Chris?
The sound came from the kitchen. Suddenly, Andy felt fear climbing up his spine. He drew his gun and put his back to the wall, making for the corner and the kitchen. The lights were off in the kitchen. He peeked around the corner.
Chris!
She was on the floor in a pool of blood. A huge gash opened on
Chris!
Her forehead.
Oh God!
And then Andy was on his knees and at her side, putting his arms around her and praying that she was still breathing, that her heart was still beating. He tried to lift her up, but her reaction made him stop. And when he pulled his hands back, they were covered with her blood.
Oh, Jesus.
He could feel the torn fabric of her shirt at her back, the rough edges of her skin where Chris had taken a knife.
Somebody help me!
He pushed her hair away from her face.
Chris, oh God. Oh God, don't do this.
Oh, jeez. Medic! Somebody find a medic!
Stay with me, baby.
Her eyes opened and her mouth moved.
He
and he couldn't understand what she was saying. He had to put his ear by her lips.
He took Justin.
This has to be the worst Christmas dinner of my life. And that's saying something.
Huntress looked across the gymnasium, where the tables had been set up in rows, the 80-plus men, women, and children still in the strongman sector, all seated opposite one another, eating overcooked turkey. If there was joy to be found, Huntress couldn't see proof of it on a single face. At the head table, Pettit ate in silence, flanked by Anderson on one side, Foley on the other. While almost everyone else looked down at their meals, Pettit kept his head up, glaring at the people spread out before him. Of his 14 strongmen, 8 were present at the meal. The remaining 6 were on guard duty outside, each wearing a silly Santa's cap that Pettit had handed them earlier in the evening. God alone knew where he'd found those. At least no one had tried to sing any carols. She looked across the head table, saw that Foley had looked up from his plate just enough to meet her gaze. His expression was sympathetic, and she remembered that he had family somewhere outside of Gotham, and that just made her mood worse. The radio on Anderson's waist came to life.
Post 4. Repeat, post 4. I've got a visual. Someone's out there.
Everyone in the room stopped eating. Every family turning their attention to the head table.
Oh my God, it's Joker.
Huntress felt her insides freeze. The effect throughout the room was immediate, the horror covering every face.
This is post 6. Joker is attacking post 6.
Everyone began moving for the exits, and Huntress headed quickly to the closest set of doors, the main doors, her mind racing. If the Joker was out there, she couldn't let these people leave. If he was outside, he'd kill every last one of them.
Hey! I didn't say this meal was finished! Nobody leaves until I say they can go! Nobody! Block the doors!
Pettit's men were running to block the exits, their weapons already slung. The crowd was backing away again, massing in the center. Couples clutching one another for comfort and safety. Pettit's men began locking the doors, barricading every set except for the main entrance where Huntress stood.
Don't panic! Everyone, stay calm!
They seemed to be listening to her. Until the gunfire from outside hit everyone ducking instinctively. Huntress turned to see Foley had made it to her side, Pettit coming right behind. Right now, there was nothing on the radios coming from the men outside.
All right.
But the night before Christmas and all through the gigs, not a creature was stirring, not even the pig. Hey, Billy, you in there? Oink, oink, oink.
Pettit's face flushed almost crimson.
Anderson, get second squad up here now.
Yes, sir.
Huntress blocked the door with her body.
What the hell are you doing? If you go out there, he'll kill you.
Get out of my way, Huntress. It's time someone put that lunatic down once and for all.
Damn it, Pettit. Can't you see that's just what Joker wants you to do? He's trying to draw you out.
He's challenging my control, making me look like a fool in front of my people. No one does that to me, Princess. No one. Got it? Anderson, we ready?
Yes, sir.
Anderson adjusted his grip on the M16 in his hands. Pettit nodded and faced the small window set in the main doors, looking through one of them. Huntress peeked out as well. Joker was standing about 30 feet from the entrance, in the rubble near the end of the block. There was a woman with him, the one Huntress had heard rumors about, Harley Quinn. On the ground in front of them were the bodies of three of Pettit's guards in a pool of their own blood. Quinn was wearing one of the Santa hats.
"You've always been all talk and no walk, piggy!"
Joker turned around, dropped his pants, and mooned them.
"God damn it! I'm gonna kill him! I'm gonna do what should have been done to that lunatic years ago.
Pettit!
What you and Gordon and Batman never had the guts to do. Understand? I'm gonna kill him once and for all. I'm gonna end that maggot's reign of terror.
What you waiting for, Billy boy? Losing your nerve? Or is it this poor little Billy is just another wimp cop like Gordon and the rest of the Pork Factory?
Pettit extended his arm.
Rifle.
Anderson immediately supplied him with one.
On my count. Ready?
Yes, sir.
Think this through, Pettit. It's a trap. It's got to be.
You get out of my way right now, woman, or so help me, I'll drop you where you stand.
He gave her a shove, clearing the doorway, and she let him go, trying to prioritize, to figure out what course of action she still had open. The whole situation was in a nosedive now. She knew it. And she knew it was a trap. If she tried to keep Pettit inside, she'd end up dead. There was no doubt in her mind that he'd order his man to open fire on her. She looked at the mass of terrified faces gathered in the room.
3, 2, 1.
And the door was open, and Pettit and the strongman were pouring out of the gym and into the night. Huntress followed. It had started snowing. Joker and Harley Quinn had vanished. Pettit dropped into a crouch by the nearest pile of rubble, motioning his men to spread out.
Yeah, figures you'd run and hide. He's the coward now, huh? Anderson!
Sir?
Bring the squad up and spread out. Find that clown!
Yes, sir!
Huntress watched while the men moved into the darkness, weapons at the ready. She moved closer to where Pettit was kneeling, hearing someone behind her, and when she looked, she saw that Foley had come out as well. Pettit brought the rifle up, using the rubble as a brace on the barrel. Huntress scanned the surrounding terrain and immediately felt another wave of despair. There were just too many places to hide, too many nooks and crannies and shadows to make any search effective.
Come on, come on. Come on, clown, give me a shot.
Foley was crouching beside Huntress now, and they exchanged glances. Then she saw movement just ahead of her, at the edge of the spilled light coming from the gymnasium. Behind a line of rubble, she caught the barest movement, and she thought maybe it was the top of someone's head. Then the head popped up, and Joker waved at them.
Got you, you son of a bitch.
In the dim light through the falling snow, Huntress saw Joker's head blow open, his body falling back behind the rubble. Pettit lowered the rifle and shot a smug grin at Huntress.
Wasn't so hard after all, was it?
Nice shot, Billy boy. Wanna try for two?
God damn it!
Huntress looked on, stunned, as Joker climbed over the rubble again, waving his hands. Before she could speak, Pettit fired again. The bullet hit Joker in the chest this time, spinning him. He hit the ground, blood pouring from his mouth.
That should do it.
No, no, no! I'm over here!
Another Joker sprang from behind the rubble, and Huntress realized what was happening.
No! Don't shoot!
Huntress saw Anderson hit the ground, the green wig falling from his ruptured skull. She ran back to Pettit, trying to grab the rifle.
You're killing your own men! It's not him!
Pettit yanked the rifle free from her grip.
Get off me! I'm gonna kill him! I'm gonna kill him!
Foley grabbed Huntress by the shoulders.
Don't! Huntress, he's gone. He'll kill you.
That was Anderson! You're killing your own people!
Pettit ignored her. Then he turned his back to the rubble and started to reload. Huntress couldn't breathe, and she looked across the empty ground at the corpses on the blood-stained snow.
Thinks he can play games with me? I'll show him how we play games. Thinks he can make a joke of me? Thinks he's a comedian? See how funny he is? Dead!
He's not listening anymore. He's not even hearing us.
Can you call him? Call Batman?
I can't. I don't know how. Get out of here, Hugh. Get to Central. Get Essen or Gordon. Somebody. Get help.
Foley nodded and started to move,
and Huntress saw the motion from the corner of her eye, from the line where the Jokers had been rising, and she dived into Foley. Bringing him to the ground as machine gun fire raked the earth beyond them.
Go!
Foley got to his feet, began a crouching run in Pettit's direction, Huntress following.
Where the hell do you think you're going?
He's getting back up!
He's what?
This is crazy, Bill! We need help! I'm going to try to get to Central. See if you can hold off Joker until I get back.
I said nobody leaves without my permission.
And before Huntress could move, he had dropped the rifle and drawn his pistol.
No!
Foley hit the ground like a bag of wet flour, his eyes open in death. And everything else faded away then. Pettit, the gymnasium, Joker, all of it. And she was looking down at Foley. The man who had only wanted to spend the holidays with his family. Pettit had taken up the rifle again.
You're as mad as Joker is. As sick and as evil and as wrong!
And she was on him before thinking to move, knocking the rifle away.
You bastard!
Barely thinking, she took him by the collar and threw him against the rubble.
Foley trusted you. He trusted you to protect him.
She punched him in the gut, doubling him over. Then threw him at the gym, his back slamming against the doors. Then she grabbed him again by the throat, knocking the hat from his head.
They all did. All your men. All the people here. We all did.
She rammed the launcher on her right wrist, under his chin. All it would take would be a twist of her hand, and she'd drive a metal spike into his brain. She'd kill the son of a bitch where he stood. Pettit's eyes wandered, dazed, blood running down his face.
You're the worst of us, you know that, Pettit. And I know how to solve at least one problem. You're a dead man, Billy.
A small red dot appeared in Pettit's forehead.
Couldn't have put it better myself.
Huntress spun, and there he was, still holding the gun, wisps of smoke flying away from the barrel. Quinn was beside him, the automatic rifle from one of Pettit's men now slung over her shoulder. And behind them were a group of men, Joker's boys. Huntress dropped Pettit and stepped back until she felt her boots hit the door of the gym.
Oh, don't mind us. We're just here to gather some things, then we'll be on our way. Babies in particular. I understand there's something in the neighborhood of four of the little cherubs inside, are there not? You're blocking the door, Toots.
Yeah. I know.
Oh, you've got to be kidding me. You're not seriously thinking of taking us all on. It's just you versus us now, kiddo. That's one of you versus all of us. And thanks to Billy Boy, there on the ground, I'd like to stress that we are now armed.
Huntress didn't move. He threw one arm around Harley and pulled her with him as he backed away.
Oh well, it's your funeral. Go ahead, boys. Kill her.
Huntress knew she didn't have a chance, and she didn't care. Before Joker's boys had even begun to move, she dropped three of them with shots from her wrist launcher, spikes burying deep in shins, arms, knees. She went into motion, never losing track of the door. Huntress fought, not as if her life depended on it, but as if the lives of everyone in the building behind her did. And she beat them all. And as the last one fell, she turned from the door. Her leg exploded in a sudden numb heat, and she fell to her knees. Joker stood only 10 feet away, his pistol pointed at her.
Oh, you're good. She's good, isn't she, Harley?
Very good.
Yep.
This shot to her chest drove Huntress back, and she felt the blood beginning to bubble up into her throat. For a second, she couldn't remember where she was, and then she saw him again, and he was talking to her.
It's funny, you see. I wouldn't keep shooting you like this if I didn't have all these darn bullets. But who knew that Pettit had so many of the little buggers? I'd swear that psycho had a bullet for every man, woman, and child in Gotham.
She tried to tell Joker what she thought of him, of Pettit and his bullets. But when she opened her mouth, the only thing that came out was more blood.
And since I won't be using the bullets on the kids, you know, I figure these ones, well, they're yours.
Huntress forced herself upright, feeling the chill of the metal door against her back. It felt very cold.
Here, have another one, cutie.
This time she barely felt the impact, but her left side felt funny suddenly. And she was on the ground again, and wondering how she had gotten there. Her arm wouldn't move, and the world seemed to be turning very shaky. Joker was in front of her now, and she felt something hot pressing against the side of her head.
Oh, tough little thing, aren't you?
Huntress heard a sound like the key turning in a lock, but she knew that couldn't be right. The door wasn't locked, was it?
Well, it's been fun.
Oh, right. I'm going to die.
Now you get it!
A batarang knocked Joker's aim away, and the bullet missed Huntress and buried itself in the side of the building.
Hey, what gives?
Joker looked up, and finally, after all this time, there he was. Batman coming to punish him, and that other one, Nighty Knight or Nightwing. That was it, Nightwing.
Huntress!
Nightwing seemed really upset about something.
Where have you been?
Batman grabbed him by the jacket, and Joker would have been willing to take the punch if it had come, but it didn't, because Harley at that moment, bless her twisted little soul, opened fire with the assault rifle. Batman let him go, diving to the ground, and then going for Harley. Nightwing was busy trying to save the girl's life, so Joker took the opportunity to get the bomb he'd made out of his pocket and arm it.
Now that we're all here, it's time to bring down the house!
He threw it onto the roof of the gym. Batman was coming back toward Joker now, but Nightwing knew his lines.
Bomb!
Batman veered off and up, going for the roof of the building.
Come on, Harley!
Joker grabbed Harley by the arm and ran for it. Huntress felt like she was swimming in something hot and sticky.
Huntress, can you hear me?
And she opened her eyes to see Nightwing looking down at her, and she wondered how he'd snuck up on her again. There was something she had to tell him, too, something important, but her mouth was filled with copper and wasn't moving right.
Baby wanted to take other babies.
Hold on, we're gonna take care of you. Hold on.
She felt the pressure in her side increase, and with the pain came more focus, and she suddenly remembered where they were and what had happened. Above her, Nightwing turned his head briefly, and she managed to follow his gaze and saw Batman was standing only a couple of feet away, holding something metal and plastic in his hands.
Joker was after the babies.
Get her to Dr. Tompkins.
Batman.
He moved closer, looking down at her.
Are you happy now?
His hand came down, and she felt the slight brush of his touch against her forehead. You rest. Good work, Huntress. Then he turned, and she knew she was losing consciousness.
Congratulations, Helena. That's his highest praise. Honest.
Oh.
Sarah Essen thought she would cry when she unwrapped the present her husband and stepdaughter had given her. In addition to the meal, the joy of being together, the fact that they had managed to even present her with a gift, made her speechless. That it was a gift such as this, that made her want to weep.
You like it?
She likes it.
It was a picture in a beautiful golden oak frame, an 8x10 photograph of the three of them, taken almost 2 years earlier at the end of the season. They'd all gone to watch the Knights play, and the photograph caught them on that afternoon, preserving the moment perfectly. The slight sunburn from a day in the park, the huge smiles each of them wore beneath their Gotham Knights baseball caps. Their family.
I love you, Sarah. Merry Christmas.
I love you too.
Jim. We have a serious problem.
Merry Christmas to you, too.
Joker's attacked Pettit's camp. Pettit and Foley are dead. Huntress held Joker off, but she's in critical now and may not make it. Batman kept his gaze on Gordon, and Sarah noticed that Barbara was listening as closely as any of them.
He was after the infants. He's kidnapped babies all across the No Man's Land.
Dear Lord.
Do you think... did he take Justin?
I don't know. God, let's hope not.
It's his statement. He wants to murder Hope. I'm gathering my people.
I'll get as many officers as possible. Have them assemble at Central.
We'll meet you there.
Nightwing ignored Oracle's command over his comlink, carrying Huntress's limp body as carefully as he could into the MASH camp, ignoring the stairs and the people, moving straight for the largest tent.
Leslie! Leslie!
Alfred appeared in the doorway.
Dear God.
He reached out, trying to take Huntress from Nightwing's arms.
I've got it!
He pushed past until he could lay her down on an empty table. Leslie was there now, her sleeves already rolled up.
Good God! What happened? Dr. Zahedi! Hurry!
We've got her now, lad.
Don't let her die. You can't let her die.
We'll attend her as best we can. You have an emergency of your own to deal with now, I think.
Alfred, please.
We'll do all we can.
Nightwing shut his eyes, nodding, then turned away, heading back out of the tent. Batgirl was waiting for him.
Central. We're supposed to go to Central.
She began moving south without another word. Nightwing cast a last glance back.
Please don't let her die.
It had taken Robin longer to arrive than the rest of them, because he'd been having dinner with his father at their new house just north of the city. Luckily, Oracle's call had come in after they'd eaten, and he was able to duck out of his room and into the snowy night, then steal onto one of the helicopters departing the nearby National Guard staging area. He was afraid he was going to be too late all the same, and was almost relieved to see that, although Gordon and Essen and most of the cops were already outside of Central, Nightwing and Batgirl had only just arrived. Robin joined the group silently, catching sight of the faces all around him, the expressions of strained concern. Nightwing looked miserable, his costume stained with blood. Robin wanted to ask him what had happened. All Oracle had said was that Joker had stolen babies, but Batman started talking.
Oracle ran some quick checks, and LexCorp is missing 70 pounds of Semtex.
Which means Joker can make a hell of a big explosion. We've received a total of 36 missing persons reports in the course of the night, all infants, including Sergeant Weir's baby.
She was attacked in her home this evening. She's at the MASH unit now, in stable condition.
The parents must be going mad.
We're going to find those children.
I don't think so!
All of them turned to see him on the opposite rooftop, waving down at them. In the dim light of the night, he wasn't much more than a silhouette. He had a Santa cap on his head, and the voice was unmistakable.
Here's how it's going to play, kiddies! 'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through the town, little babies were hidden by Gotham's King Clown. As Christmas Day neared and the sun it did rise, either bats found the kids, or the kids, well, they died!
Go!
Joker had turned and was already out of sight beyond the rooftop. Robin looked at Nightwing.
Let's fan out.
And they began the search. It was Bullock's suggestion to check the abandoned daycare centers, and Montoya thought that was an excellent idea. Problem was that there were over 200 of them in Gotham before the No Man's Land, and they didn't know where to start. But that being the case, and figuring the Joker couldn't have had much time, they started in the area around Central, working out in a box pattern northward toward the park. They tried to be quick about it, moving from location to location. Joker's deadline wasn't a joke. Wherever those kids were, unless they were found, they would be dead come dawn. The snow fell steadily as they searched one derelict building after the other, running through the streets, finally commandeering an army jeep to help with their transport. By 4 in the morning, both of them were tense, frustrated, and feeling the panic grow. It wasn't just them, either.
Looks like I've got another dead end here. I'm continuing north, across Munch Row.
They had radios, and over them they heard Gordon or Essen or other cops calling in, offering what little news or theories they had. So far, nothing. It was Bullock who saw the sign.
Happy Clown Daycare.
He stopped the jeep, and he and Montoya got out, drawing their guns and moving low for the door. The place was a mess, not yet officially condemned, but certainly uninhabited. The door itself looked like it was barely on its hinges. Harvey held out three fingers for the count, then two, then one, and together they put their boots against the door, sending it flying off its hinges. Inside was darkness. Montoya pulled her flashlight, used it to support her weapon, and when the beam hit the rows and rows of eyes, she almost dropped it.
Holy!
There were dolls everywhere. On the floor, in the cubbies, on the shelves, even suspended from the sagging ceiling by strings. Toy dolls, their eyes open and glassy, reflecting the light.
Looks clear.
Why dolls?
Bullock looked around for a light switch. Montoya thought about it, and then she knew why.
Harvey, no!
And she was grabbing her partner and pulling him out the door, but not before Bullock had thrown the light switch. And the explosion knocked them clear off the steps, across the sidewalk, and into the snow-covered street. Montoya shook her head to clear it, feeling like it was full of wet laundry, then reached for Harvey, who was pulling himself upright using the fender of the Jeep.
Joker's way ahead of us.
Maniac even did his Christmas shopping. You okay, Pod?
I'm fine.
Then let's keep looking.
Robin was glad to have Oracle in his ear. Not only did she keep him company, but she kept him informed of what else was going on. Batman was still after Joker, Nightwing, Batgirl, the cops, and all the rest. They were looking for babies. Where would you hide babies in a city like Gotham?
Oracle?
Go ahead.
I'm thinking a nursery.
Sounds like a plan.
So, Robin checked nurseries. For hours. One after the other. And then, outside of Lil Bud's nursery, he saw a sign in a broken window that made him think it might be worth a closer look. The sign had been drawn by hand and said, Baby's Breath. Buy one, get one free.
Oracle, I think I might have something.
Be careful. It's most likely a trap.
Robin took his time with the door, checking it for tripwires carefully before pushing it open. He almost expected an explosion anyway, but nothing happened. The interior of the shop was empty. All of the shelves bare, but for a register on the counter. Another sign was propped there, saying, Wake up and smell the roses. Cautiously, he made his way across the floor, watching his feet, until he reached the counter. He leaned over it slowly, trying to look behind, and then climbed onto the counter for a better view.
Robin?
Yeah. There's a bunch of dolls here under the counter. The kind with mouths, you know, that you can stick a bottle in?
Mouths?
Yeah, and it looks like a tank of some sort running from the dolls. It's a canister of some kind.
He reached down to lift one of the dolls.
Joker gas! Mask on, Robin!
He stopped, straightened, got the gas mask from his belt, and slipped it on. Then he leaned back down and reached for the nearest doll. Sure enough, from the mouth of each one came a cloud of green vapor, Joker's trademark poison gas.
Robin? Robin, answer me!
I got it.
He yanked the tube from the canister and angrily switched it off.
You were right. It was a trap.
Any clues?
Nothing.
Keep looking.
Yeah.
He was beginning to be afraid. They wouldn't pull this one off. DeFilippis had demanded to go back on active duty, and Gordon and Essen took the officer with them in their group, the three of them searching high and low. Chris was as safe as she could be, and the only thing the young officer could think now was that he had to find their son. By 4 in the morning, they had searched every playground in the western half of the city, including the smaller recreation areas at the fast food restaurants. It was the fast food places that had given him the idea then that they should check Discovery Domain. It had been on his beat before the NML, one of those facilities where parents could take their preschoolers to run and play. When DeFilippa suggested it, both Gordon and Essen agreed that it was a logical location to look. The place was in serious disrepair when they arrived. Shining the beams from their flashlights around the cavernous space, they could see three slides, a merry-go-round, a couple of jungle gyms, and a tent where the floor was covered with plastic balls that kids could jump around in. The three of them made their way forward.
Stop! Look!
The commissioner shone his light into the tent. There was a sea of tiny hands and feet jutting out from the surface of plastic spheres.
Justin!
Don't!
She grabbed him from behind. And he fell back into her, and they both went to the ground.
Damn it!
Essen pushed him away, and then shone her light at the ground.
Look, tripwire. It's a trap.
They're dolls.
DeFilippis just nodded, feeling foolish. Gordon patted him on the shoulder, giving him a hand up.
Hey, stay off my wife. You've got a woman of your own.
Right.
Essen got to her feet.
Damn. My radio's busted.
Temporary equipment. Lovely. Breaks when you drop it.
Or land on it.
Head back to Central, get another one. I don't want any of us out of communication for too long.
Okay, I'll call in as soon as I'm ready to rejoin you.
Over the earpiece in his cowl, Batman had heard the radio traffic between Oracle and the rest of his team, heard about the Joker gas in the nursery, as well as Nightwing's experience.
The giant Christmas tree in Camplex was decorated with dolls. They turned out to be incendiary devices. The fireball is under control now, and nobody seems to be hurt.
Roger that.
He had also heard about the efforts of the police, the traps, and he knew that no one had found Joker yet. It took a while, but by 4 in the morning, Batman knew that he wasn't chasing Joker, even though the figure was dressed like him. Joker was never in such good shape. Joker was never this fast or nimble, or this willing to keep running. Which meant it had to be Quinn in the costume, decoying for Joker. The options were clear then. Either he continued to pursue, hoping to catch her and extract Joker's location out of her, or he could abandon the chase and start from scratch. It was an easy choice to make. And so he continued after her, racing along the rooftops and alleyways, trying to close the distance. The trouble was that if indeed it was Quinn, Quinn was fast. And since her goal seemed to be running, not fighting, she was making it very difficult for Batman to get in close. Finally, at a construction site only 15 blocks from Camp Lex, things began to go his way. His target started to climb the scaffolding, and Batman easily got to the high ground first, then leapt down. This close, it was clear it wasn't Joker. He moved to block her progress, and she tried to kick him. He caught it, punched her hard in the face, and then let go of her leg. She fell backward, and the wig came loose, and the makeup had smudged when he'd hit her, and he could see that it was Quinn, the girl he'd been hearing so much about.
We've never met before.
He picked her up by the front of her jacket, holding her out in front of him.
The way this works is, you tell me what I want to know.
Or
this.
He pivoted and dangled her over the edge of the scaffolding. He pulled her back in, close.
One chance. Where is he?
Central! He hid the babies at Central! He thought that would be funny if all the babies were at Central! And please don't kill me, I don't wanna...
Batman dropped her back onto the scaffolding and jumped, using the cape to slow his descent.
Oracle, Joker is at Central. I'm en route.
Understood.
Oracle activated her voice filter and began broadcasting on all channels, all bands, so everyone with a radio could hear her. The voice came over Gordon's radio.
Joker is at Central. Repeat, Joker has the babies at Central. All personnel respond.
He looked at Officer DeFilippis.
Sarah.
And he started running. The precinct was empty and dark when Sarah Essen arrived. She stopped inside the entryway, switching on the main lights. And then she shook the accumulated snow from her hair, brushing it from her shoulders. The heat had been left on, and it made the snowflakes melt quickly, sent the water trickling down the inside of her shirt. The radios were kept in their own room off the hallway behind the main desk, and Essen made directly for them. She stepped into the radio room, dropping her broken one on the table and reaching for the first in the rack, pulling it out and switching it on. Nothing happened. She turned the radio in her hand and found that the battery pack had been destroyed by some sort of sharp object, either a knife or a screwdriver having punctured the unit. She set the radio down and pulled another.
What the?
And found that battery pack in the same condition.
Oh, God.
She stepped quietly out of the room, her weapon held in both hands. She checked the hallway carefully. No one was visible. There was no doubt this time. It wasn't her mind playing tricks on her. It had come from nearby, she was certain. The door to the basement was open. There was no reason for the door to the basement to be open. There was nothing in the basement, because the basement hadn't been finished yet. At the top of the stairs, she stopped, looking down. There was light coming from below, dimly. She went down the stairs as quietly as she knew how, the gun raised now. And at the foot of the stairs, she stepped off, then turned into the main room of the basement. her shoulder against the wall. The babies were there, and she didn't need to count to know she had found all 36 of them. And in a way, it made perfect sense. Joker wanted a statement. What better one than murdering 36 infants right beneath the noses of the police? None of the babies had been injured yet, as far as she could tell. Some were sleeping on the earth floor, others crawling clumsily around. Still more just sitting still, watching the strangeness of the world. Joker stood in the center of the room, his back to her, rocking a child gently in his arms.
No, no, it's okay, little guy. It's okay. You won't feel a thing, I promise. And you'll thank Unky Joker when it's over, trust me on this. I know what I'm talking about. Most of the time.
He raised the baby in both hands, putting him against his shoulder.
I'll tell you a secret, though. Big secret. Biggest secret there is. It's this. Life is the biggest joke of all. You're just gonna get the punchline a little sooner, little fella.
Essen put her sights on the base of his skull.
Freeze! GCPD. You're under arrest, Joker.
Joker turned slowly, lowering the baby from his shoulder to rest in the crook of his left arm. The baby was a little boy, olive-skinned and wide-eyed, and tear tracks had dried on his cheeks. Essen recognized the infant. She had delivered him. Joker was staring at Essen, and he wasn't smiling. It was the first time she'd ever seen him without his smile, and it made the marrow freeze in Sarah's bones.
Put the baby down. Gently. Do it now.
Joker stared at her.
Do it, Joker.
Very slowly, he began to crack a smile.
Oh, it's the police. I'd like to report a crime.
He began to walk toward her, stepping heedlessly through the infants crawling around his feet. His right hand dipped into his jacket and came out with a pistol of his own.
She tried to shoot me, officer, and I dropped the baby.
Stop! I mean it!
No, I mean, she rushed me, and I dropped the baby.
He was close now, and still holding Justin in the crook of his left arm. He brought his gun up level with the infant's head. She was staring right at him. He wasn't more than 3 feet away. And right then, Sarah Essen knew what would happen next. And in that instant, she felt suddenly calm.
Maybe I just...
He dropped Justin. Essen let go of her gun and lunged. In her arms, the baby looked at her, blissfully unaware.
I've got you. It'll be okay.
Good catch.
Joker had his gun pressed to the side of her head, just inside her ear, at her temple. Carefully, she set the baby down.
Merry Christmas.
The sun was just starting to rise as the Batman landed in front of Central. He was about to start up the stairs when he heard others approaching. He turned to see Gordon and another cop coming from behind. The look in Gordon's eyes told him everything he needed to know.
Well, it's about time you got here.
Joker was now in the doorway, leaning against the frame, smiling. He was holding a pistol loosely in his right hand. He dropped it onto the snow-covered steps at his feet. Then he began making his way down the stairs, headed for Batman.
I surrender.
With his peripheral vision, Batman saw Montoya and Bullock and another officer rushing into the station. Gordon was making his way slowly toward Joker. Batman realized then that it stopped snowing. More people were around them now, gathering at the foot of the stairs. Robin and Nightwing and Batgirl had arrived. The sunlight was beginning to gleam off the fresh snow, making everything seem exposed, too bright. Montoya and Bullock came out of the station, stopping at the head of the stairs. Detective Montoya was crying. Bullock looked ashen.
Gosh, Jim, I'm so sorry.
Anyone bring coffee?
Gordon drew his revolver and whipped it along the side of Joker's head, sending him sprawling across the steps.
Hannibal.
Gordon used both hands to support his gun, proper shooter stance, leveling the barrel at Joker's head. Batman remained motionless, watching. On his back, Joker dabbed at the blood coursing down the side of his face.
You'll be hearing from my attorney, Commissioner.
Slowly, he got back to his feet.
Jim.
He's gone too far. He paralyzed my daughter. My little girl. He just murdered my bride. My Sarah. My friend. My love.
Gordon squeezed his eyes shut. As if by closing them, he could change the reality, make it different, make it all go away. Batman knew from experience that it wouldn't work. Gordon opened his eyes. He didn't look away from Joker, refusing to see Batman, to see anyone else around him.
Too much. Too much. Too far.
We've all gone too far.
Batman raised his hand, gesturing to the crowd of people now around the steps. The police, the vigilantes, the parents of the missing children.
Look at them. Look at us. They can't take it anymore.
The barrel shivered slightly in Gordon's hands.
It's time to bring our people back, Jim.
Gordon wiped quickly at the tears on his cheeks, then adjusted his sights again.
I won't stop you.
Gordon nodded slightly, as if acknowledging the words. Or perhaps another voice, from somewhere else entirely.
Say, you and the missus never had kidlins of your own, did ya?
Joker lay on the steps, clutching at where his left knee had once been. Blood was rushing down his calf, over his shoe, into the snow.
Hey! I get it! Just like your daughter, Commissioner! Oh, that's good! That's really funny!
Gordon put his gun back into its holster and turned his back on the building.
Bullock, Montoya, arrest him. The charge is murder.
Batman saw Gordon sag, and then he moved, catching his friend before he could fall.
I've got you.
Batman held him in the daylight, feeling Gordon's grief, rocking his own body.
I've got you.
On New Year's Eve, the No Man's Land celebrated its end. The people who had survived the year gathering at different locations throughout Gotham. At midnight, fireworks exploded in the sky, a shower of flame and sparks and color that marked not only the dawn of a new era, but the rechristening of an old city. In her bed in the MASH sector, the explosions woke Helena Bertinelli long enough for her to realize that she was still alive. At Central, someone threw a switch, and the bright silhouette of a bat painted the clouds, tracking back and forth in the sky. Everyone who saw it cheered. Everyone who saw it knew what it meant. Everyone who saw it knew the truth. And almost everyone saw it, but for two men and one woman. At midnight on New Year's Eve, Jim Gordon and his daughter Barbara opened a bottle of champagne at the graveside of Sarah Essen Gordon, loving wife, friend, and officer. They drank a toast to Sarah, and another to Gotham, and a third to the future. Then they held one another while each wept tears that they thought would never stop. Outside of Gotham City, on the grounds where once had stood Wayne Manor and where it would soon stand again, Bruce Wayne also visited a gravesite deep on the estate. He carefully cleared the overgrowth from all of the headstones and markers, paying special attention, as always, to that of his parents.
I've come home.
Article. Personal. Entry number 893. January 1st. NML plus one. Dear Dad, considering what I've decided, I'm not exactly sure now why I need to finish this, but somehow I do. The overused term closure comes to mind, whatever that means. If that's what I'm after, I don't really expect to find it here. So be it. I'm looking back now, trying to dry my eyes, thinking about what you said to me tonight.
Barbara, I don't think the hurt will ever stop.
You're right. It won't. Just ask Batman. I've been thinking, and I realize now that I can never show this work to you. And for that, I'm sorry. When I started out, I thought of this as a chronicle of the No Man's Land. And now I realize it's both more and less than that. But what I recorded in the name of posterity no longer needs my testimony. Sarah will be remembered in far better ways than this narrative. We keep in our hearts, after all, the true record. So you will never see this. But if it's any consolation, neither will the Batman. I'm gonna finish this half bottle of champagne by my side and drink one last toast to Gotham, and another to Sarah. But before that, there's one thing left to do.
Are you sure you wish to delete this file?
Yes. Yes, I'm sure.
This has been a graphic audio production of DC Comics Batman No Man's Land, Part 2. Copyright 2011 by DC Comics. All rights reserved. Batman and all names, characters, and elements are trademarks of DC Comics. Copyright 2011. All rights reserved. Novel written by Greg Rucka. With performances by Kara Novak as Oracle, James Konacek as Jim Gordon, Richard Rowan as the Joker, Julianne Elliott as Renee Montoya, Thomas Keegan as Two-Face, Yasmin Toison as the Huntress, James Keegan as Lex Luthor, Gregory Gorton as the Penguin, Joseph Thornhill as Bane, Bradley Smith as Nightwing, Margie Tompros as Harley Quinn, Danny Gavigan as William Pettit, Susan Linsky as Sarah Essen, Terrence Aisleford as Alfred Pennyworth, Nanette Savard as Cassandra, Chris Rowan as Robin, Scott McCormick as Harvey Bullock, Alyssa Wilmoth as Christina Ware, Nick DePinto as Hugh Foley, Drew Kopis as Andy DeFilippis, Michael Glenn as Garrett, Larissa Gallagher as Mercy Graves, Daniel Sontag as Tallyman, Faith Potts as Leslie Tompkins, Ken Jackson as Lucius Fox, with James Lewis, Alexander Strain, Lily Beacon, Jeff Allen, Elizabeth Demery, Dylan Lynch, and Ren Casey. Directed and adapted for graphic audio by Richard Rowan. Produced by Rick Rowan and Dwayne Beeman. Executive producers James Cutting, Mary Cutting, and Angie Cornette. Dialogue editing and graphic audio sound design by Temeskin Wubna. The Batman theme and additional original music by Dan Sondak. If you enjoyed Batman No Man's Land, be sure to look for our other graphic audio DC Comics titles, including Batman Dead White and Batman Inferno. Available at road stops everywhere at 1-800-670-5220 or at www.graphicaudio.net.
If you can't find that graphic audio title you're looking for, go to www.graphicaudio.net, where you can order it in CD format or digital download. If you're on the road, call 1-800-670-5220. That's 1-800-670-5220. Or www.graphicaudio.net. And if you're looking for a great way to try out a different graphic audio series, check out our convenient and easy-to-store long-haul box sets, which contain up to 5 books of a series. Available only at www.graphicaudio.net. Be sure to sign up for our monthly newsletter or follow us on Twitter.